So this Rejoice Sunday, Gaudete Sunday in Latin. If we're called to rejoice, we should probably hear some good readings about rejoicing, right? Something about victory over our enemies, something about some of the great miracles that Christ or one of the apostles performed. But what do we hear? We hear about the people of Isaiah's time, the Israelite community in disarray. They've been defeated in battle. They've been kicked out of their homes. Most of them have been taken into captivity, but the ones that remain are dispersed. And it happened years ago. They're expecting to be returned, but they don't see any end in sight. So what is there to rejoice in that? We have John in prison in our gospel, condemned, waiting for his execution. Where is the rejoicing in that? In our letter from St. James, we have the early Christian community. They had seen Christ's death and his resurrection, and they were expecting him to return. He told them, "I will be back." But they are getting on in years as well, and he is not back. So where is the rejoicing in that? What is there to celebrate? We see in all of these that God's ways are not our ways. The Babylonian captivity lasted almost 60 years. But they were given a promise that it would only be a temporary dispersal from their homeland. But as the years went by, they began to doubt. Generations of the Israelite community began to pass away. And they were wondering, giving up hope. And that is the community that Isaiah is writing to today. He believed deeply that God would do as promised. But for Isaiah, it wasn't simply a going back. That's what the Israelite community wanted. They just wanted to go back. They wanted things to be the way they were. Things are never the way they were. And they're never as good as we thought they were. But what is promised is better than anything we can ever imagine. This vision of the blind seeing, the lame walking, the deaf hearing. This promise is more than simply a physical healing. It is a promise of a spiritual healing. All of creation was injured by the fall of Adam, and all of creation will be restored in the second coming. This new community of Christians that James was writing to, they're experiencing many of the same things. Waiting for Christ's promise to be fulfilled. When they had heard that he said that he would return, they put him on their time schedule. Yes, they believed he would return, but he better return according to when I think he should return. And again, they are experiencing delays. Many of their community are dying, and they don't know what to do with that. Many of them are tempted to turn away, as were the early Israelites. And so James, like Isaiah, comes to them. James puts it in a way that they are going to understand it because they are mostly farmers, people tied to the land, shepherds. He says, look at the rains. A farmer needs the rains, but he cannot control them. He needs the early rains. He needs the late rains. The early rains to germinate, the late rains for that fruitful harvest. In between, there's going to be times of dryness. All of these can be seen in God's kingdom. Jesus' public life, his miracles, his teachings, these are the early rains. These are the things that germinate the seeds of faith in his followers. And yes, there would be dry times. John the Baptist in prison is one of the dry times. But then there will be fruitful rains at the end. Christ's passion, death, and resurrection is what brings fruitfulness to the faith of his followers. Take as an example of hardship and patience the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. There is a cause to rejoice in that. One day, our waiting will be over. We don't know when it will be, but we do have faith that it will be. So John teaches us that there is cause to rejoice as well, even in the midst of his circumstances. He sees his disciples are worried. They're at risk of losing hope. So what does he do? He sends them for their sakes, to Christ. Ask him, are you the one, or do we wait for another? And Christ tells them to go back and to reply in the words of Isaiah, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind see, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the dead are raised. Jesus wanted them and us to know that He is there doing the works of the Father, keeping the promises of the prophets. They're expecting a political king, but that's not what the Messiah was promising. Isaiah promised a suffering servant. Freeing John from prison, that would be a human kingship. Christ comes as a divine king. He doesn't come to banish human suffering. He comes to transform human suffering. The promises will be fulfilled. The promises that were given to Moses, the promises that fed Moses as he was leading the Israelite people through many dark years, and he brings them right to the edge of the promised land. And Moses is allowed to climb up on Mount Nebo and see the border of the promised land just across that river. But he was never allowed to cross into the promised land. John, too, was given only a glimmer. Even the incarnation, the miracles, the teachings of Christ, these are only the preparations for the kingdom. A kingdom that would be ushered in through his passion, death, and resurrection. And so John only gets to see the indications. He only gets to see a glimmer of what will come. A kingdom that we are called to build today in our lives until he returns in glory and he will finish completing his kingdom. A kingdom where immortality will defeat mortality. Where darkness and doubt that sometimes accompanies our faith will be banished by the beatific vision. Where this valley of tears will be conquered with unending joy. And there is confidence in adhering to that hope. It is that hope that brings us and helps us to endure many hardships here and now. Hardships like shoveling 6 inches of snow, that's easy though. But there are those hardships that are spiritual, the hardships of losing a loved one, the hardships of difficulties in a marriage, the hardships of abuse, the hardships of whatever it might be, these spiritual hardships, these hardships of the heart, those are the tough ones. Those are the difficult ones where we are called to grasp onto that hope that we know what Christ has promised will come, even though we don't know when. But we aren't just called to endure these things, but we are called to embrace them in that hope. So let's close with a story of hope. St. Charles Lwanga, 11 companions. They're all pages in the kingdom, king of Uganda, and they were all killed for their Catholic faith and for their refusing the king's immoral advances. At their execution, they're all bound and strapped with wooden planks, and then they're laid like a wagon wheel spoke with their feet in the center, and then the center pier is set on fire. And all of them are given the opportunity, renounce your faith, save your life. And all of them turned and encouraged the one next to them, encouraged each other that they would not renounce their faith. And they went to their death singing. Such cruelty and such suffering and such joy in their hearts. That is what Advent teaches us. That this hoping and knowing that something so great is on its way. Something so great that has been promised will come. So today our penitential violet is lightened a little in the rose colors of our vestments, lighting the rose candle on our Advent wreaths, preparing our hearts to receive the incarnation, to receive this little baby Christ in all of his glory, giving us a reason to sing, even in the midst of a world that sometimes seemingly is going mad.